Government is everywhere. Personally, nationally, globally, and heavenly. Welcome to Are You Real Government, the premier media outlet where we discuss what's going on around the world and how to release God's governance, the kingdom, into it. Each week, we'll be equipping you with kingdom understanding and giving you the inside track to government leaders around the globe. Now get ready to get real about government with Are You Real Government.
What in the world is going on? And more importantly, what in your world is going on? This is your host of Are You Real Government, Dub Alexander. I'm a spiritual advisor to the influential, and I have a passion to see the governance of God, the kingdom, revealed, made practical, and implemented into every realm of culture, especially government. Remember, you can catch the founder of the Are You Real podcast, John Fuller, and his show, The Original Are You Real, every Wednesday on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Last week, we discussed what it takes to move as a true kingdom statesman in order to bring kingdom influence to the government mountain. Since that episode aired, I have fielded several inquiries as to what I mean by the government mountain. And so today, I'm going to lay out the Seven Mountain Strategy for those of you who have never heard it. And in particular, its relevance to the government and political landscape right here in the United States of America. To be clear, nobody on the planet does a better job of laying out the Seven Mountain Strategy than Dr. Lance Wallnau, but I will do my best to do justice to the genius of it here today. In every fully developed country in the world, you will find seven spheres of influence, or what Lance and myself refer to as mountains of influence. These spheres of influence, or mountains, as I will refer to them from now on, consist of the following seven categories: religion, family, education, government, media, arts and entertainment, and business. Every person on the planet, including you, the listener, and everyone you know, is engaged with some level of influence on at least one of these mountains. Now, the people who sit in the seats of authority, or to say it another way, the people at the tops of these mountains who carry the most influence, actually end up calling the shots as far as the quality of life and what the life experience is of everyone within that specific nation. So let's roll through these mountains and get a little more clarity on them. The first mountain I want to address is the religion mountain. Now, this sphere of influence varies greatly dependent upon what the prevailing religion happens to be in any given nation. Whether it be Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, etc., the majority people group that identifies with that religion will carry a level of influence and the power of which will be commanded by the individuals holding the top offices in that religious structure. Pastors, rabbis, priests, chaplains, people employed by religion-specific schools, or those working for religious nonprofits would all be people who are firmly a part of the religion mountain. Next, the family mountain. The strength, power, and influence of the family can be seen exemplified by the Kurdish people, who see themselves as their own nation, although they have no land yet to call their own. The same with the Roma people in Europe, and of course the Jewish people who prior to 1948 went through a period of time with no territory to call their own, and yet remained strong as a nation, held together simply by the strength of family. Stay-at-home parents, family counselors, foster care providers, child protective services, ministries like Focus on the Family or Marriage Today are just a few of the people who make up the family mountain. Education. The education mountain is a monumental influencer. As President Ronald Reagan once said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on to them to do the same. Or one day, we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like in the United States where men were free. A huge part of passing down the mindset and worldviews that accurately depict the truth of a nation come through the influence of the educational system. From elementary schools to high schools, public, private, and charter schools, online or community colleges, and universities of all calibers. Every one of these organizations is shaping the mindsets and forming the opinions of generation after generation. The influence that this mountain employs impacts all other mountains as young people graduate out of the educational system and assume levels of responsibility and influence in their various fields of occupation. Of course, all the teachers, administrators, coaches, and professors that you know are the framework of this sphere of influence. Religion, family, education. Next is my favorite mountain, the government mountain. Like I quoted Chris Vallotton last week, and it bears repeating, if you don't care about the government, it is because you live under the rule of a good one. The government of a nation, the nation that you live in, is influencing and dictating countless nuances in your life. There are so many rules and regulations being put into place on a yearly basis that impact everything in your life, from your finances to the benefits and health care available to you, what educational opportunities are within reach, and what is allowed to be taught in different institutions, how well protected you are, and what opportunities are readily available for you to access, In my personal opinion, the only job of the government should be to preserve sovereignty, dispense justice, and protect opportunity. I'll say that again. In my personal opinion, the purpose of any government in any nation should be to only preserve sovereignty, dispense justice, and protect opportunity. I'll leave that there, because honestly, I could spend the rest of our time together expounding on that one thought alone. The people who make up the framework of government are vast and varied. From the constituents of Washington, D.C., representing you on Capitol Hill, to the fireman or police officer down the street, your child, sibling, or friend serving in the military, all of these are people found in the government mountain. Let's move on to the media mountain. The job of the media mountain is to broadcast truth. I'll say that again. The job of the media mountain is to broadcast truth. Now, I believe if we are being honest, regardless of our political affiliation, we would agree that this rarely happens on any type of consistent basis. Everything we hear from news outlets, newspapers, and heaven help us, the internet, has been run through some type of filter or agenda 99.9% of the time. I won't spend any more of our time bemoaning the current state of affairs on the media mountain, other than to mention journalists, news anchors, cameramen, columnists, reporters, bloggers, etc., all make up this mountain. The media mountain is not to be confused with the arts and entertainment mountain, which includes movies, music, sports, sculpture, art, dance, theater, and recreation in general. The easiest way to remember the distinction between the two is this. The media mountain's job is to broadcast truth. The arts and entertainment mountain's job is to suspend reality to give you a break in time, to breathe, and to enjoy something. It is truly a gift to all mankind. The last mountain is the business mountain. The business mountain funds everything. It keeps the economy of a nation going. This mountain includes big business, small business, international trade, the healthcare industry, food service, hospitality, the automobile trade. The list goes on and on. Hopefully by now you will have recognized which mountain your career is a part of. Now, all of this information and categorization that I've just handed you begs the question, why is it important to recognize these individual mountains of influence, and what does all of this have to do with the kingdom in government? Well, first of all, if you want to create change on a national level, understanding how influence operates in your country is of ultimate importance. It is said that the world turns on money and power, but I would like to add that money and power move at the direction of influence. If you partner the government mountain, power, and the business mountain, money, together, it quickly becomes a synergistic juggernaut, which is why you find big business and government in bed together so often. However, much of what they do is dictated and determined by the influence of the other mountains. Let's step back in time to a little over a year ago. Billionaire businessman Donald Trump has won out the Republican nomination against 13 viable opponents and is facing off with the Clinton dynasty. And all of a sudden, you see every mountain begin to flex its metaphorical muscle of influence in order to dictate the outcome of the most important government mountain event in the last 4 years, if not longer. As expected, big business money stepped in, with major funding directed toward their usual party leanings. Unexpectedly, within the religion mountain, which is often quiet when it comes to these things, people began to speak up. Pastor Max Licato, for instance, whom I have never heard broach the subject of politics before, wrote an article expressing his disgust for the Trump antics, as he called them. On the other side, unlikely partners like Dr. Lance Wallnau, Reverend Franklin Graham, and Dr. Daryl Scott voiced their support of the billionaire businessman. In the education mountain, riots are breaking out on university and college campuses. There are mass protests, vandalism, and implementation of safe spaces. Professors are losing jobs over their political stance or losing their cool on video, voicing their opinions, all because of the upcoming election. Hollywood is absolutely losing their minds on the arts and entertainment mountain. All of a sudden, people of great talent are being presented by the media as people of great wisdom and insight, with insider knowledge of who could best lead us or solve the problems of a nation. Musicians, rappers, and comedians all used their platforms and microphones to sound off one way or another and threatened to move to Canada. The whole time, the media mountain was making a killing, sadly for the most part, editing, twisting, and portraying every actual event from an agenda-driven point of view. Sadly, the one mountain without much influence, because it is in such a state of disrepair in our nation, the family mountain, only made occasional appearances voicing its opinion on abortion, marriage, etc. It was truly a circus, but despite the frivolity and foolishness of most of it, it cannot be denied that the power of influence in each of these mountains was seen, heard, and felt, and played into making the 2016 election one of the most intriguing in the history of the United States. Before this podcast is over, we are going to look at two of the reasons that I believe allowed the billionaire businessman to make a clean sweep into the White House, namely sphere overlap and the principle of the MENA. Before that, though, I can hear what some of you are thinking. What does any of this have to do with the kingdom? Let's take a quick look at the Great Commission found in the book of Matthew, chapter 28, verses 18 through 20. And Jesus came and spoke to them, saying, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations." I want us to look at the Greek words for disciples and nations. The word for disciple is mathetuo, to teach and to instruct, and the word for nation, ethnos, a tribe, nation, or people group. Jesus commanded us to go and teach and train nations in his ways. This stands out in stark contrast to what Mark recorded in chapter 16, verse 15. "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature." Preach the gospel to every creature. The word for preach is caruso, to publish or proclaim openly something which has been done. The word gospel, euangelion, the glad tidings of salvation through Christ. And lastly, the word creature, katesis, an individual thing, being, or creation. So the Great Commission account in Mark is heavily evangelistic. It's all about proclaiming what Jesus has done and leading individuals into a personal relationship with him. In Matthew's account, it's about teaching nations how to do things God's way. How many of you know that one can be born again and yet still be completely ignorant as to how to run a country? That's why both components are so indispensable. Now the issue is that Christians have done a great job of sharing the message of salvation in an evangelistic way to individuals and a terrible job of infiltrating culture and taking the heart and authority of God into places of influence where decisions that impact nations are made. You see, religion will always call you to isolate and defend, but the kingdom will always call you to infiltrate and dominate. But we are beginning to see that change, with the true revelation of the kingdom beginning to pick up momentum in our nation. The sons and daughters of God are picking up their royal calling and beginning to impact their mountain for the kingdom. As we are faithful to do this, carry the kingdom, the heart and authority of God, into all seven spheres of influence in our nation, we will see our nation begin to change in a great way. We cannot lose. The kingdom, Matthew 13:33 states, is like a yeast in a measure of flour. It works its way through all of the dough. Once the kingdom is in the mountain, once the kingdom is in the nation, you can't get it out, and it will cause everything around it to rise. Come on, somebody. Simply put, the Seven Mountain Strategy is this: for sons and daughters of God to gain clarity on their identity and calling, and then infiltrate the seven mountains of influence in their nation, releasing the heart and authority of God, teaching and training people who hold positions of authority in each of the mountains, God's way of doing things, until the nation begins to operate according to God's original intent for it. Back to the past election, and specifically the strength of sphere overlap and the MENA principle. I believe that these two kingdom laws, that regardless of whether or not the individual who employs them is aware of their existence or function, once implemented, will unlock authority in nations. The idea behind sphere overlap is this. I believe that once someone has gained the position of authority that they were created for in their mountain of influence, that unlocks the opportunity for them to reach that same level of influence in a different mountain. Take, for example, David in the Bible. In 1 Samuel chapter 16, we find David being famous for his musicianship. This is arts and entertainment mountain. This gift that he developed into a skill puts him in the position of spending time playing as a personal musician to King Saul. How many of you know that playing in the palace of the king is the top of the arts and entertainment mountain in that day and age? This is a picture of Proverbs 18:16 at work, which says, "A man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men." In the next chapter, we find David proclaiming that he can take Goliath. King Saul hears about this and sends for David to come tell him about it. When David comes into the presence of the king, he knows how to carry himself and is able to communicate his thoughts with clarity. He's not overwhelmed. He's not starstruck. Why? Because he has been on that same level before on a different platform or in a different mountain, not as a warrior, but as a musician. His experience and success in one mountain prepared him to be able to move wisely in another. And all of this was the launch of David's journey to conquer the government mountain in Israel. Not unlike this, Trump put in work to conquer the business mountain. This unlocked a door in the arts and entertainment mountain to host the show The Apprentice on NBC, which for years was among the highest-ranking reality TV shows in the nation. When Trump decided to run for president, he had already conquered two mountains. The business mountain had provided him with enough money that he could not be bought or controlled, and the arts and entertainment mountain had made him a household name, granting him high national recognition. One of the reasons that I believe he was able to steamroll over all of his opponents and take the highest seat of a nation in a mountain that he had no prior experience in was because he had already conquered two mountains, and the synergistic influence from those worked in his favor to walk into the top spot in another, sphere overlap at its finest and most defined. Next, let's discuss the principle of the Minas, or Manas. Now, this is a kingdom principle that my mentor, Dr. Barry Linhart, shared with me, and not 6 months later, Chris Vallotton began dropping teachings on it. This happens frequently, as both of these generals in the kingdom drink from the same spring, as I like to say. Great revelators, both of them. Now, to pull the whole truth of the parable of the Minas out, it is necessary to first touch on the parable of the talents, which to the eye without revelation seems like the same story. Matthew chapter 25, verses 14 through 30. For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country, who called his servants to him and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, approximately $30,000, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his own ability. I want you to notice that, according to his own ability, and immediately he went on a journey. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded them and made another 5 talents. And likewise, he who had received 2 gained 2 more also, but he who had received 1 went and dug it in the ground and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained. Notice that. I have gained 5 more talents beside them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of the Lord. Now in the Greek, the word few things there is oligos, meaning little. And the word for many things is palous, meaning much. So a more accurate translation would be, his Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over little. I will now make you ruler over much. Enter into the joy of your Lord. He who had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I have gained 2 more talents beside them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over little. I will make you ruler over much. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Then he who had received 1 talent came and said, Lord, I know you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. And things end really badly for this last guy. Now, one of the hidden clues in this statement was that his master reaped where he did not sow and gathered where he did not scatter seed. We are supposed to look like our master, and if he has the ability to profit where he has not worked, I don't know about you, but I am up for that. Before we get there in the parable of the Minas, I want you to take note that in the parable of the talents, each man was given different amounts according to his ability. They all came back saying, I have gained, or implying that they themselves had worked for the increase. And lastly, that having been faithful with little, they were rewarded with much. Now let's look at Luke chapter 19, verses 12 through 27. Therefore he said, Jesus, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. So he called 10 of his servants and delivered to them 10 minas. Approximately $500. So they each received the same amount. And he said to them, do business until I come. And so it was that when he returned, having received the kingdom, he then commanded these servants to whom he had given the money to be called to him, that he might know how much every man had gained by training. Then came the first, saying, Master, your mina has earned 10 minas. Your mina has earned 10 minas. And he said, well done, good servant. Because you were faithful in very little, have authority over 10 cities. The second came, saying, Master, your mina has earned 5 minas. Likewise, he said to him, you also be over 5 cities. Then another came, saying, Master, here is your mina, which I have kept put away in a handkerchief. And again, things end badly for this guy. Now, what is so strikingly different in this story is that these men were given equal opportunity. They learned how to make money work for them, and their reward was not more money, not more stuff, but cities. Now, how many of you know that Trump does not have an hourly rate? He does not work for money. His money is invested and works for him. Because he learned how to do this, he earned access to some of the most valuable properties in several cities in the U.S. New York City, Chicago, Washington, D.C., Las Vegas, and many more. He took that access and built state-of-the-art facilities, which he maintained with excellence. Listen, he stewarded money well. It rewarded him by working for him, which earned him cities. He stewarded those cities well, and this reputation worked for him, and he earned authority over a nation. Sphere overlap and the MENA principle were at work in his journey to the Oval Office. Now, was Trump even aware of these two principles or putting them into motion purposefully? I don't think so. But it doesn't matter. You don't have to understand the law of gravity in order for it to impact your life. And the laws of the kingdom are no different. What I want you to see now is that sons and daughters of God have the opportunity to become aware of these kingdom principles and intentionally implement them into their lives, so that we can get the heart and authority of God to the tops of the mountains of influence in our nation. I will leave you with one final thought. Love him or hate him, I don't really care. President Trump sits as the current father of our nation. He is a man who has mastered money. And just as the children in a family have access to what the father has earned, I believe that there is an anointing available to us as long as he is in office to be able to receive a wealth mentality at an accelerated rate. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 22 says, "A sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous." For decades, Christians, especially in the charismatic community, have been waiting for this transfer of wealth to take place. But I would submit to you that this transfer will occur not in the form of physical wealth, but in a transfer of a wealth mentality. You see, the church, for the most part, has embraced a poverty mentality, while the world has continued to learn how someone has to think in order to make and steward money well. It's time for us to renew our minds in this area and to learn how to be good stewards of not just the voice of God, not just the knowledge of his heart for the nation, but also our finances, so that we can have a place at the same table as wealth that is not representative of the kingdom does. I know that this thought is way outside the box for many of you, but for those of you that this word hits your spirit right, I hope you will receive it and pursue it so that we can become more effective for the kingdom. That's going to do it for today. I'd love your feedback on today's episode, what topics piqued your interest, and what you, the audience, would like to hear more of in future episodes. You can find ways to connect with me directly, including all my social media handles, by visiting the About Me page at rureal.org. As well, you will find access to today's show notes, which will contain links to everybody whose work I've quoted or referenced today. While you are there, check out the other members of the Are You Real podcast family, like Matt Dietz with Are You Real Creative, who just did a really cool interview with the Holy Ghost filmmaker Darren Wilson. Thanks so much for joining me today. Again, my name is Dub, that's D-U-B-B, Alexander, and with that, and until next time, it's been Dub, it's been Kingdom, and it's been Real.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Are You Real Government? For in-depth resources, show notes, information on today's discussion, or to connect with your host personally, please visit rureal.org. While you're there, be sure to check out the other podcasts in the Are You Real family. Until next time, thanks for keeping it real with Are You Real Government?